Right, so we're looking at another encounter with Jesus. And before we start, I thought I'd like to set the scene. And just to say that we're going to be thinking all the way through about how the encounter with Jesus affects all the people in the story. And we just sang, "I stand amazed in Jesus' presence." And we're going to look now and see how the people in this story were affected when they met him physically. So we've got the situation where the chief priests and the Pharisees wanted to get rid of Jesus. They didn't like him very much because he was very popular with the masses. And the masses, ordinary people, were very disenchanted with Roman rule. And they were very disenchanted with the rules imposed by the priests and the Pharisees. They felt that the people there didn't understand them at all. The traditions of the elders, it's called, and the strict rules that they imposed were far too great, they felt. They were too great a burden for the everyday working man and woman, because most of them were farmers or fishermen or carpenters or builders, and they had to work hard physically in order to stay afloat. They had to pay lots of taxes, lots of rules to obey, and they were finding it really hard to be able to provide for their families. And I had a little naughty thought, and I thought, well, that's a bit like today, isn't it, really? We reckon that the Brexit vote was because people were fed up with being told what to do by the establishment. And they thought that ordinary people ought to have a say, and they voted to leave Europe. And then if you put the news on this morning and you see what's going on in America, you know, Donald Trump, and you think, gosh, really, do people want him as president? But then you think, it's the ordinary people that are disenchanted with what's going on in the political world in America who might be voting for him. They don't want to be told what to do by a select few who they feel have no idea about their ordinary lives. And this is what the people in Jerusalem and around were thinking at that time. They'd heard Jesus, and Jesus had come, and he was talking about a new way, one in which they were important, each individual was important, and their families were considered to be as important as those who were in political power and in power within the temple. And they were going to be cared for and loved. So Jesus was really anti-establishment. And we're going to read in a minute from John 8, verses 1 to 11. And the chapter before that, we learned that there was a meeting between the guards, the soldiers, and the chief priests and the Pharisees and the teachers of the law. Because the guards had been sent to arrest Jesus, and they'd come back empty-handed. And they'd come back empty-handed because the crowd was so hostile to them, they were so pro-Jesus, that they didn't want to rock the boat. They didn't want to arrest Jesus and risk the wrath of the crowd. But also, I think secretly, they admired Jesus, and they didn't want to arrest him. So the authorities were in a difficult situation, so it wasn't going to be easy to find a reason to arrest Jesus. So they decide to take matters into their own hands, and they decide to plot against him, to try to trick him. And so we're going to read now. I'm going to read from John chapter 8, verses 1 to 11. So after the meeting, we're heard, each one went to his own home. But Jesus went to the Mount of Olives. At dawn, he appeared again in the temple courts, where all the people gathered round him, and he sat down to teach them. The teachers of the law and the Pharisees brought in a woman caught in adultery. They made her stand before the group and said to Jesus, "Teacher, This woman was caught in the act of adultery. In the law, Moses commanded us to stone such women. Now, what do you say? They were using this question as a trap in order to have a basis for accusing him. But Jesus bent down and started to write on the ground with his finger. When they kept on questioning him, he straightened up and said to them, "If any one of you is without sin, let him be the first to throw a stone at her." Again, he stooped down and wrote on the ground. At this, those who heard began to go away one at a time, the older ones first, until only Jesus was left with a woman still standing there. Jesus straightened up and asked her, "Woman, where are they? Has no one condemned you?" "No one, sir," she said. "Then neither do I condemn you," Jesus declared. "Go now and leave your life of sin." So, this woman was caught in adultery. Quite important to realise that in Jewish law it was no good people are having circumstantial evidence. I think that's the technical word. You can't say, "I've heard," or "I saw somebody coming out of her house when her husband wasn't home." They actually had to be caught in the act. So you can imagine the scenario when possibly this woman was in bed with somebody who wasn't her husband, and she was dragged out of bed before this company of people. Quite interestingly, the man was also guilty of adultery, and he could have been, that was against the law as well, and he could have had the same punishment. But one suspects that it had been prearranged, and he managed to slip away quietly. So it was the woman who came before these people in a public place. So I want us to think about how certain people felt. And I want to start off thinking about that woman. She was brought to this huge crowd in the temple with all these important people and everyday people. She would have known some of those people there probably. Just think how humiliated she must have felt. We don't know her circumstances. We don't know anything about the woman. But it wasn't uncommon. I'm not excusing her, but it wasn't uncommon in those days for people to have sexual partners who weren't their husbands. And in fact, there are records of there being temple prostitutes. We don't know whether this was a prostitute or whether it was just an ordinary woman who was having an affair. But she must have been humiliated to have her dirty washing hung out in public, to actually have to stand before them. She was probably quite shocked as well to be suddenly dragged out and stood before these people. And I suspect she felt ashamed as well as humiliated and shocked. Then we come to the Pharisees. And think how they must have been feeling, and think about the reasons that they did it. They have been trying to get Jesus arrested. This was a plot. It was a trick. They probably felt very smug. "Now we have him. Let's see if we can get out of this one." They were self-righteous and they were confident. And it was obviously a trick, because the woman wouldn't normally have been dragged into that situation. If she'd been found guilty of adultery, she wouldn't have been put in public before this great gathering. It would have been dealt with by a special group of people, a special court, and it would have been dealt with quietly, more discreetly. But the trap, it's important that we understand the trap. Jesus is forced into a situation of being caught between a rock and a hard place, if you like. If he said, yes, she is guilty, the sentence would have been to stone her to death. And in doing that, he would have broken the Roman law. The Roman law said that nobody, no non-Roman citizen, was allowed to administer the death penalty. So he could have been arrested by the guards because he was sentencing her to death. But if he said, let her go, he was seen to be condoning something which broke the Mosaic law, the law of the Old Testament, the law of the temple. And therefore, he could have been arrested for that. But Jesus saw the situation. He saw it for what it was. And he disarmed them by putting the onus back on them. So if you remember what we said, he just bent down and wrote in the sand, or wrote on the ground with his finger. And then when he straightened up, he said, if any one of you is without sin, let him be the first to throw a stone at her. So he was saying, examine yourself before you condemn this woman. So let's think of the reactions of everybody afterwards, after they'd encountered Jesus, after they'd met Jesus. The Pharisees first, one by one, they went away. They realised that they were not without sin. They were conscience-stricken, and they were probably afraid as well, because if they threw a stone, they would have been guilty of breaking the Roman law and actually condemning her to death. They were shown up to be hypocrites for condemning the woman for her behaviour, when actually, when they looked at their own hearts and their own lives, they realised that they were guilty of other things. So under Jesus' gaze, they realised they were no different from the woman. They were as guilty as the woman. And then imagine what the woman must have felt from her humiliation, from her shame, from her fear that she was going to be condemned to death. She realised that she was going to be set free. But I suspect in those moments, she also realised her own sin. She refers to Jesus at the end as Sir. And in other versions of the Bible, other translations, it's Lord. So we assume from that that she has realised who Jesus is, and that she wants to be part of his followers, not continuing her life. Jesus doesn't condone what she's done. He actually says, go and leave your life of sin. He's challenging her to change. He's saying, what you've done is wrong. It's up to you now to change it. And everybody in this account, whether they were those in authority, whether they were the teachers of the law, the chief priests, the Pharisees, or the woman, they were all forced to look into their own hearts and how they live their lives in the presence of Jesus, the light of the world. Under his scrutiny, under his gaze, they realised they'd all fallen short, and they changed. Now, I'm not saying they changed forever, but at that moment, they realised their need to change. So, nice story. What about us? And as you read the Bible, that's what we want to do, isn't it? We want to see, well, how does this apply to us? Do we change when we encounter Jesus? Very easy, isn't it, to justify the way we live our lives. In this world, in this society that we have, in the culture of today, well, everybody does it. I'm no different. Can't be wrong. But if you just look at the world around us and you look at what's going on in the world, you see the result of that attitude, the result of man's quest for power, at man's selfishness, at man's desire to put themselves first and not everybody else. We look at injustices that are being done, wars that are being fought. So those attitudes are not helpful. And although we don't probably go around condemning people to death, or it's not as a result of our behaviour perhaps that there's a war in Syria, but you know, it's little things, isn't it? It's symptomatic of man's heart and man's attitude. And when we meet Jesus, when we encounter him for ourselves, we realise that we are far from perfect, that we are sinful. We fall very short of how he wants us to live. But the great thing is, we know that he cares for us. He knows what we're like. And that's why he sent his son to this world for us. And I'm going to very quickly read a passage that you are so familiar with. And that's John 3, 16 to 21. For God so loved the world that he gave us his one and only son, that whoever believes in him shall not perish but have eternal life. For God did not send his son into the world to condemn the world, but to save the world through him. Whoever believes in him is not condemned, but whoever does not believe stands condemned already, because he has not believed in the name of God's one and only Son. This is the verdict. Light has come into the world, but men love darkness instead of light, because their deeds were evil. Everyone who does evil hates the light and will not come into the light for fear that his deeds will be exposed. But whoever lives by the truth comes into the light, so that it may be seen plainly that what he has been done through God. So changing is not easy. It's often very protracted. It takes years and years, and it's an ongoing process as we regularly come into his presence and we are challenged by him. And I just want to read you a quick prayer before our last hymn. And it's about change.